You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Have I got the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, June 9th, 2014. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is the award-winning The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow
of the New York Times building in the fashionable
Dollar Lunch District of New York City.
On today's program, Dr. Robert Lustig. He's going to be telling us the bitter truth about sugar and debunking myths about the obesity epidemic that take the hook off of corporations and put the hook on you. We're going to be going over all of that. Plus, Republicans in Virginia have a brilliant, novel new strategy for blocking people from getting health care. It's called bribery, and they're taking it back real old school. George Will says being a sexual assault victim is a coveted status, and the sociopathy just parades on. There was a Taliban attack in Karachi Airport in Pakistan. Several people died, including the attackers. We might touch on that later. Plus, the man, just got to say, the man who won Twitter last week, my co-host, my partner.
Why, thank
my
you.
My collaborator, whose line I stepped on in the intro. I apologize. The great Matt Binder.
Why, thank you.
What do you got?
What I got coming up for all of you is the latest on this right-wing freakout to us bringing home a prisoner of war soldier. Also, what were these five Taliban people we traded for Bo Bergdahl up to when they were captured? These no good, the hardest of the hardcore, as John McCain called them. What were they in the middle of doing when we captured them and sent them to Guantanamo for the next 10 years of their life? We'll get to that. What else do we got? Rand Paul says something wonderful about who we should have traded instead of the Taliban members. And we also... Oh, shocking, America, another shooting. What? You gotta be kidding me. That never happens here.
A lot of people who kill people in America. Obviously nothing to do with our gun laws. Folks, as always, we are at the helm on Mondays. You can listen to Sam's terrestrial radio show 3 to 6. We're going to have a link up to, I believe it is, I'm sorry, the name is escaping me right now.
It's
Progressive.
The,
go ahead.
It's a... On TuneIn.com, or if you download the TuneIn app, you can go to the channel Progressive Voices.
Yes.
If it's not, if Sam's show, Ring of Fire Radio with Sam Steeder, is not airing where you are in terms of your local radio station or whatever, that's how you listen to the show. Yes, there are some markets that aren't playing the Sam show yet. And for all of you who've been emailing us saying, what's going on? Sam's show got canceled or something? It never happened. No, Sam actually did a full week's worth of shows last week.
And
he will be doing a full
rave
week.
Reviews.
Yeah, rave reviews. So you're the ones missing out.
And there are even appearances from us in the first week. So it's all happening. All right, folks, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back with Dr. Robert Lustig.
Kick out your front door. How you gonna come with your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun? When the law breaks in, how you gonna go?
shot down on the pavement or waiting on death row. You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you'll have to answer too. Oh, guns of Brixton. Well, the money seems good and your life, you like it well, but surely your time will come, as in heaven or as in hell.
Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks, joined as always by the great Matt Binder, and joining us now is Dr. Robert Lustig. He's a professor of endocrinology at the University of California, San Francisco, and president of the Institute for Responsible Nutrition, a nonprofit dedicated to improving the global food chain and eradicating type 2 diabetes in children. Dr. Lustig, how are you? Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Michael.
It's great to have you on. So I was reminded, actually, in looking at your work, which is really very extensive, including several talks on YouTube that have gained a significant amount of views, and people are clearly very interested in what you're talking about. And there was a book several years ago by Daniel Goleman with the title, I believe the title was Vital Lies, Simple Truths. And I kept thinking of that title when I read and watched your work, because I think that that's really what you're doing in these areas of obesity, public health, sugar, nutrition, where we're living under a lot of very destructive mythology, and the kind of results speak for themselves, but we're still enacting and acting out of the same delusions and mythologies. So to get us started, what are the basic fallacies that we're living under when it comes to sugar and calories and obesity?
The food industry, and in fact the federal government, and to be honest with you, the entire medical establishment, continues to espouse three myths. And until we break these three myths, we cannot move forward. And our organization, the Institute for Responsible Nutrition, is devoted specifically to changing the conversation by debunking these three myths. So here they go. Number one, it's about obesity. They want you to believe it's about obesity because if it's about obesity, it's your fault.
Right.
It's behavior. You eat too much, you exercise too little. Problem is, it's not about obesity. It never was. It's about the diseases that travel with obesity. It's about type 2 diabetes, hypertension, lipid problems, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, polycystic ovarian disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and the list goes on. These are the diseases that drive healthcare bankrupt, country by country. Obesity doesn't cost very much money. These diseases are what cost the big bucks. This is 75% of our healthcare budget, which is currently $2.7 trillion. So solving these diseases is first and foremost. The reason I can say it's not about obesity is the following. The government will tell you that 80% of the obese population is metabolically ill, and that's true. But that means that 20% of the obese population is not. They're metabolically healthy. They will live a completely normal life, die at a completely normal age, cost the taxpayer nothing. Conversely, 40% of the normal weight population have the exact same chronic metabolic diseases as do the obese. They get those exact same litany of diseases I just described. They get them at a slightly lower prevalence, but when you do the math, There are actually more of them because there are more non-obese than there are obese. And when you do the math on that, there's more than half of the U.S. population who's at risk. That makes this a public health crisis. And if normal weight people get it, then how can it be about obesity? How can it be about behavior? So that's the first myth. Second myth, a calorie is a calorie. So if you believe that if you eat more calories than you burn, you'll gain weight, and vice versa, if you eat less calories than you burn, you'll lose weight, then you basically are espousing the government and the food industry's mantra. And that way they can say, well, why would you pick on any individual food, or any individual food can be part of a balanced diet?
Right.
That's their way of changing their conversation. Well, the problem is a calorie is not a calorie. In fact, how you metabolize those calories, how you absorb those calories, has everything to do with which diseases you're going to be at risk for. And it turns out that four specific foodstuffs are metabolized by the liver to liver fat differently than standard calories, say, from refined carbohydrate, for instance. They are trans fats, branched-chain amino acids, which you get in corn-fed beef, chicken, and fish,
mm-hmm.
alcohol, but kids don't drink alcohol, and finally, fructose, which is the sweet molecule in sugar and is what drives liver fat accumulation, which drives all the other chronic metabolic diseases.
Right.
So a calorie is not a calorie. And then the third myth that we have to break is it's about personal responsibility. Now, everybody wants this to be about personal responsibility because then they can be pejorative against the obese. The problem is, since normal weight people get it too, that doesn't fly. And the second thing is, in order to exercise the concept of personal responsibility, there are four caveats that have to be satisfied. Number one, you have to have knowledge. If you don't have knowledge, you can't exercise personal responsibility. Well, we're being kept from the knowledge to be able to change our diet, specifically by the food industry. Number two, you have to have access. Well, the fact is that lower socioeconomic status people don't have access. They don't even have supermarkets in
That's
their
right.
neighborhoods. They only get what's available in convenience
food
stores,
deserts.
Which is high sugar, low fiber, food deserts, very specifically because of shelf life. Number three, you have to be able to afford your choice. And right now we can't afford our choice because employers have to pay $2,750 extra per employee for obesity-related services, whether the employee is obese or not. And it's breaking the medical and the productivity bank of all of industry. And finally, the fourth one, your choice can't hurt anyone else. Because if it isn't, that's breaking the law. In fact, your choice to eat badly, get heart disease and diabetes, does. It costs me big bucks, and it costs me issues in terms of productivity. It costs me in terms of social devolution and death, and I have to pay for it. And so I'm not very happy with your choices. And when that happens, we actually regulate. And
right.
we've done that with tobacco and alcohol. So the fact is, personal responsibility doesn't work in the face of addiction. Personal responsibility does not work in the face of forced choices, which is what we have today. So these are the three myths that have to be debunked, and my job is to debunk them.
Absolutely, and I want to get, I think this choice conversation is vital, because, I mean, certainly on this show, we hear from a lot of libertarians. That's obviously a very extreme version of the kind of choice delusion. But connected with that is the whole conversation that you're raising, that this is about, that this is just an individual choice, as you're saying. And getting into the details of this, I think that there's a couple of things that we need to disaggregate that kind of come along with that myth. So one is, obviously, if you're talking about obesity in children, they don't have agency to make the same type of choice themselves due to their development, due to their choices, due to other people sort of having control over their health decisions. So that's a very important point. And then two, you know, there is, as you say, I mean, you cannot have choice, obviously, in a food desert, first and foremost, but sugar is padded throughout products, almost every product imaginable, including quote-unquote healthy products. So you're immediately getting into a conversation that, in terms of reality, is one of collective action and one of collective challenge. But we, and particularly industries benefit, and I think personal psychology benefits, and an unresponsive government benefits from the individual burden idea. So I would love if you could just get into more detail of really, really taking that particular myth of individual choice to the cleaners, throwing it out, and then what we have to move on to next.
All right. Bottom line, there's one thing that just blows individual choice out of the water. We have an epidemic of obese newborns.
Yeah.
They don't diet and exercise. They didn't get to choose what they consumed in utero. Four studies, South Africa, Israel, Russia, the United States. Birth weight is up 200 grams in every one of those countries over the past 20 years. That's a half a pound. And when you do the DEXA scanning, that is, the body composition analysis, on these newborns, it turns out that's all fat. So how come newborns are laying down a half pound of fat more today than they were 20 years ago? And the answer is because of what mother ate. So you could say, well, that's the mother's fault. Well, no, it's not, because that's what she was told to eat, and that's what SNAP and WIC gave her to eat. So she didn't have a choice. So we are fomenting this epidemic, and we're basically putting our entire next generation at risk. In fact, we've really, in fact, lost a generation of children already to this epidemic. So the concept that they had a choice as to what they consumed is a complete canard.
Yeah.
And it is that, you know, drives me as a pediatrician to try to make the food supply safe for our children today. Unfortunately, every cue, every available thing that's out there is driving these kids to eat. And every limit that we've tried to set has been rolled back, including advertising to children.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that have gone on within our society over the past 30 years in the name of free enterprise. The question is, does free enterprise trump public health? And unfortunately in the United States, the answer is yes. And is that okay? And the answer is no, it's
right.
Not okay.
Absolutely. So and let's get then to this kind of nexus, and I think we would like to bring in also your thoughts on, you know, Michelle Obama taking on the kind of Let's Move campaign and these sort of feel-good efforts around, you know, getting healthier, enjoying sports, enjoying exercise. But there's an interesting and kind of disturbing symmetry here, which I think kind of overlaps in what Michelle Obama's campaign has been, because, you know, we, as an example, we cover a lot the kind of assault on food stamps, as an example, which I think, you know, is to editorialize for a moment, totally brutal, totally cruel, and just destructive public policy. But you're raising the next layer of that question, which is obviously you need to have food stamps and public funding for nutrition. But if you have a symmetry between industries that are slinging junk to people in food deserts and in lower income areas, and then the, you know, government is incentivizing and subsidizing it through misleading food regulations, through not doing anything serious about getting actual nutritional meals and school lunch programs, we're sort of in a very unhealthy dynamic between government and the private sector there. So how did those two things play out of the kind of the aggressiveness of the food industry in moving these products, the kind of acquiescence of government, and then where do campaigns, I mean, am I being too cynical about Michelle Obama's campaign? Is, you know, these sort of efforts that come through.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
I think you're being exactly right. It all comes down to that one myth, a calorie is a calorie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have some destitute populations in America. We had, you know, Johnson first and then Nixon's war on poverty. And we needed to get calories to people. And if each calorie were equal to every other calorie, then all of these government programs that have been set up, like SNAP and WIC, National School Lunch Program, you know, they would all make sense if the goal was just to deliver calories. But a calorie is not a calorie, and where those calories come from has to do with what kind of disease you get. So the notion that you can deliver just calories is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how do you fix this? What you know, levers can you press to try to deal with this problem? And the answer is very simple. It's not, I mean, I take it back. It's not simple, but at least in conceptually, it's simple.
Right.
We have this thing called the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill rewards producers for commodities. They subsidize commodities. Commodities are storable food. Now, why did the Farm Bill become the Farm Bill in the first place? And the answer was in 1933, we had this thing called the Dust Bowl. And the Dust Bowl meant there were destitute populations around the country who had no access to food. And the food was being produced elsewhere. And so we needed storable food that could be put in silos, that could be dried, and basically exactly what Pharaoh did, you know, in for the 7 years of famine. Yeah. They stored up grain and, you know, put it somewhere so that, you know, people could eat through the famine. And we did the same thing. And so we subsidized storable food. And that made sense all the way through the Depression and also through World War II. But once World War II ended, did it make sense anymore? And the answer was no, it didn't. Yet, we've actually hardened and, you know, made those commodities even more precious by changing the rules in terms of how they were produced. And, in fact, numerous subsidies have gone to states like Iowa and Kansas, for that matter, in order to create this monolith of monoculture that has occurred.
Is that what sugar is everywhere?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sugar is another storable food. It's another commodity. It's traded on the open exchange just like it, yes. So this is what the McGovern Commission was dealt with, you know, had to deal with back in 1977 in terms of the change in our diet. And they wanted to tell people to eat less, but the food industry intervened and told them, no, we're going to rewrite your dietary guidelines to eat more, but we're going to tell them to eat more low-fat food. And this is all documented in the new movie that's out today called Fed Up, and I recommend that all of your listeners go see it because it explains how this all came to be over the past 30 years or so. And the bottom line is that because of the changes to the McGovern Commission report that were engineered by the food industry, we now have a bigger debacle than we ever had before because of the substitution of sugar for fat, because it was supposedly fewer calories, garbage. It causes increased food intake because of its effects on the hormones that regulate satiety, because of its effect on visceral fat deposition and liver fat deposition, and finally, its promotion of continued consumption because of its effects on the reward center, and it's tantamount to addiction. You put those three things together, and you've got a tsunami of metabolic disease that we are dealing with. It's all traceable back to the Farm Bill. And the question is, how are you going to fix it? Well, the answer is, fix the Farm Bill. Well, how do you do that? Well, you know, the fact is that all the lobbyists that are involved are going to make sure that that doesn't get fixed. But there is an easy way to do it. It's called differential subsidization. We are subsidizing all the bad stuff right now. We could subsidize the good stuff. We could subsidize broccoli if we wanted to. We've chosen not to. We need to rethink that. In the Nordic countries, what they did when they had an alcohol problem was they subsidized low-alcohol beer and taxed the high-alcohol spirits, and they nudged people toward consumption of less alcohol. And they saw their rates of cirrhosis and the car accidents and their medical expenditures decline over a 20-year period because they provided the carrot and the stick, and the two were yoked together in a coherent policy.
But they lost their freedom.
That.
No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
We
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I don't know about that.
No, I needed a little libertarian levity. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, they didn't lose their freedom. They just have to pay a little more if they want to get drunk.
Of course. Go ahead.
The point is, we could differentially subsidize food in this country if we chose to. And in fact, if we did, the food industry would still make money. And that's their goal. They don't really care what they sell. They've told me so.
Mm-hmm.
So could they subsidize real food, good food, and the food industry still make money? The answer is yes. But it means a new business model. And that's what our nonprofit is dedicated to, is changing the business model so that the food industry makes its money and we get healthy food instead of food that kills us. Food should confer wellness, not illness. Right now, it's the opposite. We got to fix it.
Absolutely. And I mean, as a final question then, so we have to do, it seems to me that there's two tracks of this, because we have a government policy which has its roots in, as you were identifying, some incredibly important, necessary public policies, which namely to fight hunger, provide sustenance and basics for people. That's an absolute necessary function of government. That's been connected to another thing, which I think, again, there is some importance to, which is particularly through the 70s, which is keeping prices down on certain basic foods, which is also, I think, something that is important. And then the food industry sort of providing that environment with these sugar-filled, processed, kind of commodity-based, just junk products, essentially. And we need to move to, the food industry needs to drop that without losing their money. And government needs to continue to deliver real products, real food to people, and allow it to be even more accessible, but de-incentivize and work our way from subsidizing these toxic things we're consuming. Those are the kind of two basic tracks. And that's what we need to address. And it's not about you eating a candy bar with stevia instead of real sugar.
No, that's right. It's about providing what's appropriate. Right. And the food industry has done a really good job of making the food supply in its own image. And the government's basically gone along with it. It's been both complacent and complicit. And the reason is because they're making money off it, too.
Right.
And, you know, it's schizophrenic on the part of the government to be in control of what we eat and then also promoting U.S. agriculture around the world. That's what got us into this mess, is this schizophrenic, duality of what government's in charge of. Let us be in charge of it, and we'd do a whole lot better.
And let government regulate effectively. And as I love, you had one last line that in one of your talks, you said, government, I would prefer government not be in my kitchen, but I would definitely take them over private corporations because they take my money, my choice, and my health versus some of my money and
Indeed.
My choice. Doctor.
Indeed. I don't want government. I don't want government in my kitchen unless there's a more dangerous force already there.
Right.
And unfortunately, the food industry has insinuated itself into my kitchen, whether I like it or not.
Absolutely. Dr. Robert Lustig, he's a professor of endocrinology at the University of California, San Francisco. He's the president of the Institute for Responsible Nutrition. And he's also featured in this new film that he mentioned, Fed Up, which we'll have a link to on the Majority Report website. Very much looking forward to seeing that film. Really, really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
Take care. All right, folks. Dr. Lustig. So I was looking over at Matt, and I noticed that the sort of gulps on the Coke were slowing.
Yes.
During the process of that interview.
Yes.
He actually had another thing that we didn't get into, but he has this other thing. I think it's called toffee or something. It's like thin on the outside, fat on the inside.
Listen, I'm all for subsidizing, you know, broccoli. I enjoy vegetables very much. So I make up for it. With the soda I drink, I combat it with, I'm a hearty vegetable eater.
You know what? What's amazing? I believe the top five countries in the world for diabetes. Because obviously another major source of sugar is alcohol. It is. But you can't consume alcohol at the same rate you can consume Coke and Monster Energy.
I'm sure many would argue with you there.
No, because the top places in the world for diabetes are like the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia. They don't serve alcohol. They knock themselves out on Coke and Pepsi because that's their reward. And they have the highest diabetes rates in the world.
Interesting.
And they don't serve alcohol. So those soft drinks, man, they're deadly. They're killer. I want to do some type of challenge. Maybe like I will do something even more healthy. Like I'll commit to doing like, I don't know, adding something in my running regimen, or I'll do some type of brutal exercise thing that I should do anyways, but have not been doing. And you will go 2 weeks without a soft drink.
Challenge not accepted.
Challenge not accepted. That's like, yeah, I'm going to need to listen to about 50 more talks by Dr. Lustig and maybe pass out from heat exhaustion while it's 50 degrees outside before I consider giving up my monster.
It's hot in here.
It is hot in here. It's hot in here, folks, which is...
A really quick piece that was in CNN by Anand Gopal, who's a Bernard L. Schwartz Fellow at the New American Foundation. And he's the author of No Good Men Among the Living, America, the Taliban, and the War Through Afghan Eyes. He wrote a piece where he went over the five people that we swapped to bring home Bo Bergdahl. As you all remember, the right-wing conservatives have been attacking Obama for doing this trade, this deal, even though just last year when word of a possible trade deal with Guantanamo prisoners for Bo Bergdahl got out, they were all for it last year. Do it, do it. If Obama doesn't do it, what is he doing? He hates America. And Obama does it, and they're against it now. So who, and then what? Just a few days, just last week, John McCain called these five Taliban members the most, the hardest of the hardcore, the very most dangerous. Releasing them will, without a doubt, untold American lives will be lost because of these five are now back with the Taliban. Well, here's the story. How in early 2002, shortly after the U.S. overthrow of the Taliban regime, Taliban leader Karawula Karakwa phoned Afghan President Karzai asking for a job. They were members of the same tribe. He had known the Karzai family for years. And he was hoping to use this link to switch allegiances and join the U.S.-backed Afghan government. Karzai promised to help and referred Karkawa to his brother, who is a close CIA ally. Karzai agreed to send a Karzai's brother agreed to send a rep to meet in Pakistan. But before that could happen, a rival Taliban figure alerted the Pakistani border police to Karkawa's presence. He was arrested, handed over to the Americans, and sent to Guantanamo. This guy was one of the five Taliban leaders who spent the next 10 years of his life in Guantanamo and was traded over for Bo Bergdahl. So this guy was already trying to switch sides 10 years ago. Mohammed Nabi Omari, the most junior ranking of the five. He was a small-time commander linked to pro-Taliban strongman Haqqani in the 1990s. In 2001, he was among the many of the Haqqani followers who switched allegiances to the Karzai government. Another ex-Haqqani commander who switched sides remembers him vividly. Omari was angry with the Taliban for throwing the country away all for Osama bin Laden. He said he would sit there and tell me, if I see a Taliban member, I won't even let him take a piss. I'm going to turn him in. Other former Haqqani members, including Omari, began working with the CIA. In his Guantanamo file, Omari describes dealing with an American named Mark. We worked for the Americans, he recalled. We met them regularly to get instructions and give intelligence. In that time, the U.S. was handing out money for this intelligence, which led many to believe that Omari was giving false intelligence for money. And what he was doing when giving this false intelligence, allegedly, was he was accusing some others in his that he knew of Al-Qaeda membership. So as he's doing this, his enemies are growing against him to the point where he was accused of being an insurgent. And all of a sudden, he was in Guantanamo, according to this other Haqqani fighter. So this guy seemed to have been turned in as, revenge. And so we just took him and threw him in Guantanamo.
A lot.
Yes.
With when you have a cash incentive, that's quite a regular practice.
In October 2001, Abdul Wasik, another of the five, traveled to the Ghazni province for a meeting with the CIA and Afghan warlords to strike a deal. Wasik worked with the Taliban spy agency. He was negotiating on behalf of his boss, And this is according to the memoir of Harry Crumpton, who was a deputy chief of operations at the CIA's counterterrorism center. The CIA, though, was not interested in this and only wanted intelligence leading to bin Laden and other top al-Qaeda figures. When Wasik could not deliver this because he did not actually have access to these guys, they bound and gagged him and his companions and threw them in Guantanamo. Of all the five, only two were significant military commanders. In 2001, in November 2001, Mullah Mohammed Fazi and Mullah Nurullah Nouri, when they saw their movement was collapsing, in 2001, they surrendered to the U.S.-backed warlord Abdul Rashid Dostum. By the way, both Fazl and Dostum are considered notorious human rights violators.
Dostum's a guy who let a bunch of Taliban prisoners basically bake to death in they were bound in a truck.
In shipping containers
bound like sardines. Yeah. I didn't know this. You had that in that story.
Yes.
That's always important to mention
yes.
with that guy.
And he was on
in addition to systemic rape, drug trafficking, he's one of the worst human rights violators.
You mean one of the good guys, though, because he was doing it for the Americans.
Well, he's been doing it for a lot of people for a long time, but right.
Once Dostum, the good guy working for the Americans, captured these the two military commanders and baked their foot soldiers, he sold the two military commanders to the Americans.
Right.
And then that's how they ended up in Guantanamo.
Right.
So Anand Golub, the author of this great article, great piece. You should go to CNN and read it. It's called Taliban Prisoner Swap Makes Sense. I'm sorry, his name's Gopal. He then addresses the question, how big a terror risk are the former Guantanamo prisoners? And he says, it's difficult to say. Few others who were released in 2007 from Guantanamo did join the insurgency and rose to the top ranks. But on the other hand, other Taliban leaders who were also released from Guantanamo, have successfully returned to civilian life. What is clear, though, he continues, is that with the ongoing turnover of the Taliban's mid- and senior-level leadership in recent years, it has been happening. These five aren't the first. They certainly won't be the last. At least we got something out of these five being released. The arrival of few individuals in Qatar are unlikely to make a significant impact on the battlefield in Afghanistan. So while the cost of the prisoner swap may be low, the potential payoff is high. In a country that has seen few openings for peace in the last decade, this could mark the first tangible step toward a negotiated settlement. Exactly. Exactly. We need to negotiate. We need to come to a close here. We need to end our war in Afghanistan.
So, let's see. I think...
let's go to the better half.
We'll go to the fun half. You can join us, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Obviously, libertarians. I mean, I don't know. If you want to be the one to call in to say freedom and I should drink what I want and non-aggression principle and blah, 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 blah. We'll entertain you. If you are a non-libertarian, coherent thinking human, you're also welcome to call at that same number, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I'm going to be opening the IMs in the second. We have plenty for you on the fun half. We have this George Will story. Oh, my God. We have the story out of Virginia that I actually think will probably not stand because it actually is getting like the universal, that's stunning reaction. But even the fact that it has gone this far is stunning. We'll talk about that. I'm going to answer that long, long asked question of homeschooling and politics. Do a little chunk on that. Get that answer out there. Maybe some folks will find that interesting. Plenty more. Matt's got you covered on all of these Bergdahl stories. It's crazy.
Yes,
it's insane.
I do.
So,
and not to mention this this horrific, horrible shooting in Vegas, and the details behind the two people who perpetrated this terrible crime. Oh man, it's really, it's not so shocking actually. Let me stop myself there before I say that. Yeah, it's not so shocking whatsoever. That and more, I guess, in the fun F.
The fun F! No, some of it will be fun, we promise. Also, going to be telling you everything that happened in Game of Thrones last night. Spoilers ahead, folks. No, I'm just kidding. We won't do that again. Yeah. Apologies again.
Although, when we get to the better half, I do have to say one thing about that. Not about the episode, but about the complaints we received. Let's go to the better
half.
Yeah,
we'll give you... I got my boo-hoo.
Let's go to the better half.
Well, wait. Become a member, folks.
Go to majority.fm, click become a member, and you can sign up right there. Pay via PayPal, and if PayPal doesn't do you any good, you could contact us at majorityreporters@gmail.com and tell us you want to become a member, but you don't want to pay via PayPal, and we will tell you where you could send your check. It's less than a cup of coffee a day, folks, and it helps you, it helps us continue this show.
It helps us help you.
It helps us help you.
Follow us on Twitter.
By you helping us, we're helping you.
Like us on Facebook, on all that stuff.
Subscribe to us, youtube.com/SamCedar. Leave us a review on iTunes. Just search Majority Report. Get all your Amazon junk through MajorityReportKickback.com. You will notice no difference. It takes you right to the regular Amazon homepage that everybody else sees. The only difference is that Amazon will know you came to them through us and give us a small, tiny kickback. Also, download the app, MajorityApp.com. And finally, if you need good coffee, fair trade coffee.
Coffee.
Coffee. JustCoffee.coop. Put in coupon code MAJORITY. You get 10% off. It's a win-win-win-win-win-win-win. We will see you
in the better
half.
Fun half.